This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.
It's Tuesday, the 18th of February, and this is your BizNews briefing. Reuters is reporting that South African Minister of Mineral and Petroleum Resources, Gwede Mantashe, has said that South Africa may well turn to Iran or Russia for its nuclear energy. This in a move that further exacerbates tensions between the US and South Africa. Earlier this week, Alec spoke to Aaron Banks, who is a UK entrepreneur and political donor. Banks shot to fame after the UK's Brexit referendum in 2016, when the Leave vote garnered significant political support, making Banks the largest political donor in the UK ever.
Is he wrong about South Africa? You know South Africa. You've just told us about your childhood. You clearly spend a lot of time here. How are you reading the Elon Musk, Donald Trump attack as has been perceived by some?
I think you've got to split it into two parts. I think if we take Trump first, I genuinely think he's going to try to realign the geopolitics of the whole world. And I think the weakness in US leadership led to BRICS and led to this kind of China-Russia type alliance. So if you want my opinion, I think what will happen is he'll try to wrap up the Ukraine war very quickly, probably within the next month or two, with some sort of territorial compromise. The war will end. And I think he'll try to bring Russia back towards the West rather than pushing them towards China. And I think the Americans, Trump in particular, sees China as the real enemy. That's the one that has to be confronted. Because economically, China is strong. Russia is weak. It's not a first world power. So I think that's what he's going to try and do. And I think Africa will be at the white heat of this kind of geopolitical realignment, which makes South Africa's position very interesting. Because I think he's going to really take the BRICS thing on head on. And I think the ANC have got real problems with their kind of Iranian connections, all the bad things they've done over the years. It's all going to come chipping out. And I think the Americans are going to go full guns blazing to pick the Chinese out of Africa, for want of a better description, and bring the Russians back inside and realign geopolitically. So I think to South Africa, it sits right in the middle of this. It's definitely interesting.
You mentioned Iranian connections. What do you understand by that, and why is that so important to the Americans?
I think Iran's going to be enemy number one. And I think the ANC keep racing through the various other things. So they've been dabbling things they shouldn't have been dabbling with. I think that's going to be a very problematic thing here. The Americans are bad and they're robust and they're looking to take issues on there. I think they view the whole west coast of Africa as strategically important. It'll be interesting sort of alignment. I think there's only one politician actually in South Africa at the moment really gets it. It's probably Gaetan McKenzie, who's an interesting character. But, you can see actually as well that he's probably the only one that's actually saying, let's engage with the Americans. Let's see what's what.
He could be the Nigel Farage of South Africa, perhaps?
I think he's got the potential to be the president of South Africa. And as we know, politics moves very quickly. If you look at reform, we've gone from 13% at the general election, we've doubled our support in the space of 6 to 8 months. It's astonishing the speed at which politics changes. But I think that'll be the real issue around South Africa is, the ANC, I think what is disappointing for me is the DA in government seem to have been completely subdued and, fought to heel. Whilst the government of national unity isn't a bad thing, it does seem to be just pursuing the same sort of policies as before.
When you have a look at the future for South Africa, I had a chat earlier this week with a political scientist, Dr. Franz Cronier, who says that unless South Africa wants to avoid the balkanization, i.e. splitting up, it better change its ways very quickly. Now, you have great experience on balkanization to a degree, I suppose, in the way that the UK left Brexit. There are people now being emboldened by the idea that the Western Cape, for instance, could split away from the rest of South Africa. There are people in KwaZulu-Natal who feel the same way. And France says South Africa is a very young country. It only goes back to 1910 or 115 years. What's your take on his warning there or projection?
I mean, it is an artificial country in one way, isn't it, South Africa, if you look at the history of how it was put together. And the Western Cape stands alone in terms of it's the bit of South Africa that really works and should be a leading light for how you do these things. I mean, I can see there's an argument to almost split KZN off, almost as ungovernable, really. But yeah, why not? All things are possible. I think just to finish off on the Elon Musk thing, so that was the Trump worldview. I think Elon Musk, it's slightly more nuanced than that, isn't it? I mean, I may be wrong about this, but 70% of the land is still owned by the whites. So I don't think what he's been saying is entirely true. Where the trend towards what they're talking about is a worrying one. Because if you undermine fundamental property rights, you make the country uninvestable.
Staying with South African politics, Alec spoke to respected political analyst Prince Mashile. And Prince is also the executive director of the Center for Politics and Research. Mashile shares his views on South Africa's future political landscape.
The MK is a collection of scoundrels, discredited people, state capture forces. Just look at the prominent names there. You will see most of those people are the ones who played a part, active part in state capture. And they have lost out in the ANC. And then they decided, let's go to MK, because MK is going to give them two things. Number one, potential political power. They hope and dream that one day it will be a government. Number two, immediately, it's going to address their income crisis, because these people are now unemployed. They need salaries. So what happens? MK sends them to parliament. So your tax, Alec, and my tax, we actually feed these chaps. Yeah, that's what the MK is about. Ideologically, if I were to ask anybody who has listened to everyone at MK, what does the MK stand for? I can tell you, you would struggle to find what the MK stands for. Its Secretary General, Floyd Shivambo, come from the EFF, we know him. He calls himself a Marxist-Leninist, right? Now, he is the Secretary General of MK. Is MK a Marxist-Leninist party? Certainly not. That's not what Zuma is telling us. If you listen to Zuma, MK comes across as a feudalist, traditionalist, confused party that privileges the role of traditional leaders. That's what Zuma in his head, that's how the party is about. That is calling for parliamentary democracy, not constitutional democracy. What parliament says, essentially what Zuma says is final. That's what he wants. So it is a bunch of confused characters, but don't underestimate them. They have a following mainly in KwaZulu-Natal. And they can actually upset the apple cart. If Zuma is still alive, he is the major drawing card for MK. In 2029, I would not be surprised if MK were to touch 30%. And I've said this before. The ANC is going to decline. I think it will cross the 30% mark going downward. And I think MK, if Zuma is alive, will probably be will cross the 30% mark upwards. And that will have huge implications for our politics.
What? What are those implications, especially given that the ANC perhaps would embrace its former leader?
Mark my words. This is, let me give you a script of what's going to happen in the ANC, and it will link to MK. Cyril Ramaphosa is not going to finish his term as the president of South Africa. Mark my words. You could say, but this chap is mad. Where does he get this stuff from? In the first place, as a matter of fact, Cyril Ramaphosa's predecessors did not finish their term. It's now culture in the ANC that towards the end, you remove the leader. That's its culture now. They will remove him. And by the way, Cyril Ramaphosa is the weakest president of the ANC ever. Where do I get that stuff from? Post-democracy is the first president to get 40%. There's no president of the ANC who got 40%. So he's very weak in the part. So his term in the ANC ends in December 2027. Now, there will be a new leader from December 2027. And that leader will begin to campaign sometime after the elections, municipal elections next year. There will be a faction, and that faction will be an anti-GNU faction, an anti-Ramaphosa faction. That faction will eventually emerge victorious in 2027 in December, and it will have its leader. I'm not quite sure who its leader is now. Paul could be part of that, by the way. Now, when that faction wins in 2027, it will move swiftly to remove Ramaphosa as president of South Africa. And that faction will say, we are rebuilding the ANC. And to rebuild the ANC would include bringing back the MK comrades who are ANC, as well as the EFF comrades who are also ANC. That will be the slogan. And once those people do that, we are likely to have the ANC getting power back in the lower 50s, with Zuma endorsing that if he's still alive, and Malema also being part of that arrangement. We are likely to have the ANC coming back in the lower 50s. That is a likely scenario. So the GNU will last until 2027.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking, out of the ordinary.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Yesterday, Chris Stain spoke to Brenthurst Wealth's Magnus Haystack, who says that new clients are looking to take assets offshore in a hurry, given the context of the conversation around South Africa at the moment.
We have been extremely, extremely busy with new clients suddenly realizing that the positioning that we have taken over the last 10 to 12 years has been accurate. And we're extremely busy. And the instruction from clients is simply, here it is, take it out. No questions, no arguments, just get it out of the country. Now, that in itself is a danger. If that is multiplied by a 10 or 100 or 1,000 companies who do what we do, that means there's a heck of a lot of money going to leave the country. And in itself, that's a risk. But it's a rational risk to what may happen in South Africa, where we have seen examples in Zimbabwe, on our borders, Mozambique and Angola to a lesser extent, where as a result of the attacks on minority groups, capital flies out of the door, the shutters come down, and your currency collapses and the economy collapses very soon thereafter. Now, you cannot exclude that and say that will never happen. You cannot say it definitely will happen. What we have been saying and what I've been saying is it could happen. Place your bets, ladies and gentlemen, and place the bets according to your life, your objectives, and your personal fears. Some of my clients have 100% of their assets abroad, and they live very happily and comfortable in South Africa. A lot of clients have said, no, we still like South Africa. We're buying property in Hermanus and Cape Town and Nepal. That's fine. Property prices there are still rising, but elsewhere in the country, they've collapsed. the media has actually stopped writing about how poor the property market is outside of the Western Cape, because it's a horror story. It's an absolute horror story, because you cannot give property away, whether it's residential, commercial, or block of flats. It's unsellable. So in your personal balance sheet, it's worthless, in my opinion.
Turning our attention to international business news, our partners at the Financial Times say Tesla is being caught in US-China trade wars. Let's take a listen.
Tesla is facing a setback in China as the electric vehicle company finds itself dragged into the US-China trade war. Local Chinese EVs have been outcompeting Tesla on price, and the company's chief executive, Elon Musk, has been hoping its full self-driving technology would help it get ahead. Now, Beijing has delayed granting a license that would allow Tesla to develop the tech in China. Two people with knowledge of the matter said Chinese authorities had considered using the license approval as a bargaining chip in trade negotiations with the US. Last month, Musk admitted that Tesla was in a bit of a bind when it came to its full self-driving system in China because of strict data rules imposed by both Beijing and Washington.
While Tesla may be under pressure, there's still no stopping Elon Musk. According to our colleagues at Bloomberg, Musk's AI startup, xAI, has launched its updated Grok 3 model, which Musk claims is the smartest artificial intelligence on Earth.
This is like very early stages. It was only launched within the last hour or two, and you know, access to it is going to be limited initially to Premium Plus subscribers on the X platform, which is a $22 a month subscription. But certainly some of the claims they're making and the demonstration that they gave earlier is pretty impressive. Given his love of space, he asked Grok to plot a course for a rocket from Earth to Mars and back again. So kind of keeping things relevant to SpaceX there. And yeah, they're claiming that it matches and beats the other popular models like Claude and ChatGPT. On a lot of kind of complex reasoning and calculation issues. So, yeah, it's the next step forward. Hmm.
Yeah, and as you say, we'll have to see whether independent assessments verify the claim that Musk is making, that it beats many of its competitors. Talking of which, of course, OpenAI is prominently amongst them. Does this put Sam Altman on the back foot to some extent? Is Sam Altman of OpenAI now playing catch up to Musk?
Yeah, a little bit, but I think this is a bit like a kind of multi-dimensional game of ping pong, you know, that somebody hits the ball and then it's up to somebody else to kind of take things forward. And we've seen that, you know, recently with DeepSeek launching, and now we have Grok 3. There's a ChatGPT 5 in the pipes. I'm sure we're going to see further developments from Meta on Llama 2 and Google Gemini. So, you know, I think this isn't the kind of the definitive statement in the world of generative AI and these kind of chatbots. There's a lot more to come from all of Musk's competitors on this, yeah, very, very pivotal kind of software technology.
Turning our attention to Africa, M23 rebels are tightening their grip on the eastern DRC. This after the Rwanda-backed rebels took control of the strategic town of Bukavu.
So Bukavu is a city of 1 million people, and it's key transit point for gold that has been mined in the south of Kivu province, which is then smuggled into neighboring countries and laundered into the global ecosystem, according to UN expert reports. So it's a very strategic place for M23, and it's part of what prompted President Felix Tshisekedi to ask the EU not to buy minerals from Rwanda, alleging that they've been stolen from Congo. M23 last month took over Goma, the largest city in the eastern part of DRC, 3 million people. And from the fighting, 3,000 were left dead, 3,000 injured, and the city is now short on supplies like food, water, medicine, and electricity. And this was part of the issues that was discussed at the Munich Security Council, where President Felix Tshisekedi was asking, how is it that the sovereign and territorial integrity of a country has been violated, its inhabitants massacred, yet there's no action or sanctions against the perpetrators? And he also pointed a finger of blame at the UN and AU for failing to apply pressure on Rwanda for backing M23 rebels, allegations that Rwanda continues to deny.
Yeah, well, it looks as though the M23 are going to continue tightening their grip on these eastern cities. And we know last week we were talking about it, a summit was held, many leaders got together to try to work out a solution to the conflict, and yet nothing has happened. So what is the likelihood that the international community responds this time around?
Jumana, what we are seeing now is just condemnation, but at least the voices are being added into the conversation. The UK Foreign Office says that M23 occupying Bukavu is not only sovereign and territorial integrity breach of DRC, but also breach of UN Charter, and has demanded an end of fighting and called for withdrawal of Rwandan troops from DRC, which is a really, really big step. You also have France's President Emmanuel Macron, who had a conversation with Tshisekedi and also called for M23 to withdraw from Bukavu and the airport to allow for humanitarian and civilian planes to land. But the big news was the EU lawmakers asking the Commission, its member states and international financial institutions to freeze any budget support to Rwanda until they cut all ties with M23. So we're beginning to see that pressure gradually starting to be applied at the international level.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow where our focus will be on the South African budget. Thanks as always for joining us.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees.